Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hi folks, I'm Jack Kennedy and welcome to Farm Tech Talk, the livestock show. The rain has eased off and autumn grass growth is really kicking off around the country. Shout out to our supporters, Grassland Agro and ESB Networks, for helping us to make this show happen. Let's hear from our specialists around the country. As normal, I have quick fire questions for Adam, Darren and Aidan. Remember, email your questions to farmtechtalk@farmersjournal.ie or WhatsApp 086-836-6465. Adam, one quick fire in for you. Let me read it out here now so I get it right. Some of my weanlings are lighter than others at around 250 kilos now, compared to the heavier ones at almost 350 kilos. I need to sell some now to reduce the pressure. What should I sell? The lighter ones or the heavier ones? Talk to me, Adam.
Yeah, Jack, I suppose, look, maybe it's a bit of a hard one, but I'd be slow to sell 250, because no matter what, how good the price is at 250 kilos, you know, even you're up at €3 a kilo, you're still only 750 euros, which probably is costing to keep the cow this year. So you're probably, you know, you're at nothing at that. So I tend to, maybe the sweet spot I'd say at the minute is maybe 300 to 350. I was in Granite Mart Monday night and I seen 285 kilos making 1,040, you know, and a couple of them little nice Charlie calves. So I'd say somewhere between 300 and 350. I'd say 250 is too late. So I think I'd be selling a few of the heavier ones.
Nice one. Thanks for that. Back to you in a minute, Adam. Darren, similar type question. I have lighter mountainy type lambs weighing 40 kilos. After listening to Farm Tech Talk last week, am I better to hold them to get them closer to 50 kilos than sell them now into the mart?
Yeah, look, Jack, the answer I'd have for that, it depends on grass supplies and feed supplies. Like, it's if you can hold them and you can put weight gain on cheaper, yes, of course, you're going to bring them closer to finish and you're going to increase the sale value. But on the opposite side, if you're keeping them lambs and it's going to compromise grass supplies for your condition pre-breeding, I'd be moving them on. Like, that 40 kilo, if it's a horn lamb, somewhere around €2, €220 kilo. If it's a, say, a crossbred or a poly lamb, you'd probably look around €90, €95. So, like, and it all depends on what your own supply, your feed supplies are.
Okay, nice one. Back to you in a minute, Darren. One question in for you again, Aidan. I asked Aidan this question last week and I'll ask it again this week. Would he stay feeding silage or just move to meal only? I reckon I'm growing 40 kilos per day, but my farm cover is still well below target for time of year.
So, Jack, it depends really on what his demand is, or presuming it's a he, you know, he or she's demand. You know, a growth rate of 40 kilos a day is not bad. But if your demand is 40 kilos a day, you're never going to increase your farm cover. And that seems to be the objective of the farmer here. He wants farm cover to increase because it's set as low. So really, it's a differential between your growth and your demand is what's going to drive average farm cover. If he needs more average farm cover, then I definitely continue feeding for another week or so. Growth rates are good. I mean, I bet you if he measures next week, he'll be growing 60 or 70 a day. Like, we're on an upward trajectory for the next 10 days or so. We're going to be hitting peak growth rates now, to capitalize on that, I will keep the feed in just to make the differential greater. And then you can, you know, over the course of the rest of the autumn, you'll actually feed less meal and less silage if you feed more now, if that makes sense.
No, absolutely. I might come back to you again on that later in the show. Thanks, Aidan. Adam, coming to you first. Were you buying or selling in Brannard?
I was reporting, Jack, for the Irish Farmers Journal. This, yeah.
Good man. Okay. I tell you, we touched off it last week in terms of the winter finishers and I suppose the pressures that they're under. I think I haven't listened back, but I think you mentioned something like 590 a kilo might have been needed to cover. I see a headline this week over €6 per kilo needed for winter finishers. Talk to me about kind of just a bit of the background of that one.
Yes, this was an event in Kilkenny, Jack, on Tuesday night. Declan Maron went down to it for us. And look, Keepak were there, Chagas were there, IFA were there. But look, just talking about winter finishing and Paul Crossan outlined some of the figures that they would have looked at in Chagas around what's needed, I suppose, for next, you know, February, March. And look, it's no different to last year. In terms of what you know, in terms of margins and in terms of that, it's very, very tight. And they're looking at sort of 582 for buying a 480 kilo continental steer today at 250, 255 a kilo. You know, putting in that meal at €440 a ton might be a little bit shy on that. You're up at 582. That's to break even, and there's a bit of frustration there around this break even cost, because who does that to break even, I suppose you might ask yourself, but it's up to farmers themselves maybe to add on that margin. But if you add on €100 onto that you want €100 to do all that and go through the hassle of it, that's another 26 cent on top of that 582 that you need to get you that €100 margin, or that margin to leave to pay yourself. So again, on the Frisian side of things, you know, a 400 kilo Frisian bullock being bought today at 215 a kilo, you're up there at 629 a kilo, a break even for that bullock. And then add on another 30 cent onto that for the €100 margin, and you're up at sort of that 660, which were mad figures. And you know, Jonathan Forbes was there on the night, and the usual stuff again. No, we don't really talk to people on contracts. We aren't issuing contracts this year, and just the level of risk again, Jack, being taken by farmers at the minute in terms of meal costs and store purchase price as well. It's massive.
And Adam, like, those numbers are pretty real in terms of, like, if I don't know what was selling in Granard, but I mean, if a 480, 500 kilo continental came into the ring, she would, or he would make 255 a kilo, no bother, like I'd say.
Absolutely, we have it. They're on the mart pages this week, Jack. There's a few of them heifers, you know, hitting 250, 260, 270 a kilo, some of them. So obviously there's some of those buyers have to be locked in. No matter what factories say, those bigger feeders are definitely being issued with contracts, because no way would they be giving the money around the ring at the minute in terms of what they're giving without some foresight on what's coming down the line. But yeah, for the smaller farmer, just very frustrating that no factory willing to take them on as regards price.
Okay. Adam, another piece I see you have this week is the Brexit fund should be used to genotype the herd. The president of the IFA is coming out on this one. Talk to me.
Yeah, so this is the first, I guess, I've heard of this. This was an IFA Ulster North Leinster regional meeting on Tuesday night in Good Hill in Cavan. And yeah, he came out with the question was asked as to what proposals have IFA got for that BAR, that Brexit Adjustment Reserve. There's 1.2 billion there, we'll say, allocated to Ireland. They reckon 300 to 400 million of that should be allocated to agriculture. And yet, President Tim Cullinan came out and said that he's proposing that we use that money to genotype the national herd, in terms of looking at efficiencies around better genetics through earlier slaughter age. And this is the way they're pitching it, I guess, in terms of the proposal. And also in terms of diversifying markets. Brexit isn't having an effect on the beef market at the moment, because we're still going into the UK, the protocol, everything is working there for us. But in the down the line, I suppose, if a trade deal is completed, we may need to diversify markets. And he's saying if we have our herd nationally genotyped, everything DNA traceable from plate from farm to fork, basically, that could help us get into new markets. So interesting to see that proposal coming up. And yeah, I'd be definitely for that in terms of looking at the future as regards where we're going. Look, we know the issues in dairy beef, and we need to start genotyping, and we need to start DNA registering.
Okay. Did you tell me last week, were you going to an organic farm walk, or were you at it, or what?
This was one down at Conor Larkin, ACA organised it. A massive crowd at this walk, it was last Wednesday evening, and a massive amount of interest. I've never been at a farm, it's been a long time since I've been at a farm walk, there have been so many questions, just one question after another. Mary Lynch is the new organic specialist taken on by the ACA, and she was being bombarded with questions. How do I get into it? What happens when I get into it? Level of inspections, level of grant aid, varied level of support, lion area, dosing. An interesting one, actually, and I've spoke to Aidan about it, is if you're organic or if you go organic, basically all milk replacers are banned on organic farms. I didn't actually realize that until Wednesday night. So if your dairy beef organic isn't an option for you, look at the talk about maternal milk, that you should look for maternal milk. But I guess, look, there's only a few, there's not too many would be able to do that. So you're looking at buying in wean cows, maybe, if you're organic, in terms of an organic system. But just the level of interest there was unreal. Jack Nolan was there from the Department of Agriculture, and he said he has never seen, in terms of the level of inquiries at the moment, that the Department of Agriculture is getting for the scheme that is due to open up now in October as regards people getting into it. So, yeah, look, that's interesting to see, I suppose, people looking at that. But it makes sense, Jack, because in terms of some of our beef farms, in terms of where convergence is going to take them, there's a massive drop in support payments going to go into those farms. So they're just looking, I guess, at bumping that up again.
And Adam, was the kind of was it positive questioning, or was there kind of what kind of a sense did you get once the kind of answers came across to the farmers?
No, it really was positive. There was nobody. I was expecting maybe people to start dishing it and say, oh, this can't work or this won't work for me. But people were genuinely interested as to know as to how it would work on your farm. And like you knew by the level of questioning, and there was genuine interest there around. Look at lion area, for example. That's a massive one. But there's solutions there around that too. Around, I suppose, maybe adapting another shed beside a slatted shed, or maybe just clapping on a bit of a lean-to onto the back of a slatted shed. All those things were discussed, and look what Jack Nolan said, we can look at the problems or we can look at the possibilities of our organic production. But definitely I'd say going on that night and the crowd of people that was there, there's going to be big interest in this scheme.
And Adam, of course, the reality is for a lot of them, they might actually have to reduce stock slightly. The shed space mightn't be required if they have to kind of come, you know, in terms of getting the stocking rate and bringing it down, that and allow having enough stock that the farm can feed rather than buying inputs.
Yeah, but the vast majority of farms, like this farm was in Banagher in County Offaly, probably a lot of farmers came from the west, but you know, probably stock maybe between 100 and 130 anyway. It's not huge stock. And yeah, but you're right. I suppose on a lot of farms, you have maybe seven cows in a pen. That's going to have to drop down. You know, you need 6 square meters now for a suckler cow in organic production, in an organic production system. Three square meters needs to be straw bedded. But cubicles, for example, if you 2.6 meters in a cubicle area for a cow, that would, that allows you, we'll say, to tick that box for lion area. So that could be an option. A lot of farms that have cubicles at the back of that, so it could be an option now.
Adam, give us a taste on the trade this week in terms of the March, maybe start off with the March trade.
Matrid's still pretty positive. As I said, Granard on Monday night were really positive for those sort of later bull calves, maybe that 300, 320 kilo bull calf. Interesting, I was talking to Jody Riley and he was saying there's a couple of guys now squeezing or castrating their bull calves before sale. And that's leading to, actually, there's a couple of buyers, maybe tending towards maybe older buyers that actually want those castrated calves because they want them across that hump in terms of they don't want any issues with a calf in terms of castrating them when they come onto their farm. And plus as well, they don't want the hassle of castrating. There's a lot of work to castrating or maybe getting out the vet or whatever. So there's actually a premium paid for some of those lighter calves that are castrated. There's no hassle with them. Heavier calves, probably maybe not as good as you'd like to see them. Maybe that 400, 450 kilo calf, you know, they're still coming up to maybe sort of 1100. But when you compare to maybe a calf, as I said there earlier on, 285 kilos, 1040, it doesn't seem to make sense in terms of that extra weight. Maybe you're not being paid from heifers. There was a breeding heifer sale, very, very positive. Again, guys are getting on very well with cull cows. They want to, you know, a cull cow could be coming into 1800. So it doesn't take much to bring in that heifer back in again at 1600 or 1700. And in terms of, you know, cull cows in general, and yeah, a very good trade. So March trade is going pretty well. The only stock probably that are a little bit easier are those Hereford and Angus Dairy Cross stock. They're probably back maybe sort of around maybe 215, 220, sort of struggling into that. Longer keep cattle, talking to Michael Harty in Roscrea, he says there's a little bit of uneasiness around those longer keep cattle still. The farmer or buyers just aren't as confident in those longer keep cattle.
Have you marked bids, auctions coming up this weekend?
Yeah, a really busy weekend. So we September select sale. This is with Clara Mart with 20 pedigree Angus. I think there's two bulls in it and 18 heifers and a couple of embryos. This is a timed auction. So basically people go on Friday. It's actually open at the moment. You can go in and we'll say, you know, bid away and it'll close on Sunday evening. And we have a massive sheep sale down in Waterford as well on Michael Ketch's Trenalara. I think Darren will correct me now, but I think it's Trenalara, blackface sheep. Anyway, white with a black head. They're for sale down there. I think it's Saturday, but Darren will tell you more about that.
All right, nice one. Adam, like we obviously we'll all be at the plough next week. Like, I mean, you've a couple of stock lined up to be in the tent with us, yeah.
Oh, we have, Jack. Looking forward to meeting everybody down there next week. Call into the stand. It's always good for chats and listening to people and listening to the concerns. We'll have live demos each day. We'll run a demo at 11 o'clock and run another demo at 2 o'clock. We have a few cattle down there from Tullamore, a few cattle from Tribe. Darren's bringing down a few sheep. And look, we'll just discuss the issues that's coming up. And look, at emissions targets, I suppose, is top of the agenda. And we're going to try and, you know, mull over that and see where we can make improvements on farms and what the future looks like, I suppose, for all sectors. So, yeah, looking forward to it next week.
Good job. Thanks for that. Chat to you next week, Adam. Darren, are you going down to buy some of Kitch's, like, or what's the lie of the land there?
I was just thinking if Adam's description goes as far as white with a black head, maybe that's why the black ones didn't do too good for him last year.
He obviously has a lot more information than white with a black head, Darren. I'm sure he's
exactly
DNA on some of these samples.
Exactly. Just a touch on that sale. Michael Ketch and family, look at their farming in the Cumberland Mountains. They're a long established flock, the Trinola flock. It's a Lanark flock. There'll be a few hundred, say, hoggets there. There'll be a few hundred draft yours, some very good quality rams, and then there'll also, say, some new your lambs. About 600 sheep in total, Jack. It's a unique setup because a lot of people through COVID have gone to, say, Don Farm Sale, but the Ketches are doing that for over 20 years. He sets up a ring in the shed, and this is the first year he's going sort of online as well, and look, we're delighted to be involved in that. So it's an interesting one, Jack.
It's a bit different, as you say. Like, yeah. Darren, I suppose just touching off acres again. I see Rachel Donovan has a piece there. I suppose just getting a feel for what's kind of happening from advisors around the country in terms of where they are on acres and getting up and started, etc. The headline doesn't, or some of the quotes from the advisors doesn't probably read well. Like when they talk about one big mess, etc. That kind of thing. What kind of soundings are you getting?
Actually, look, Jack, it's very variable, like, and I can see the frustration where advisors are coming from because, say, while the system is technically open to put up plans on it, there's a lot of updates happening. It is not, say, finalised. There's a few messages coming out to advisors. There's a message there a couple of weeks ago that really irked advisors. That it was around some element of, say, measuring and that, and it was telling advisors that if they had done work that it could be lost, like, or do something to that effect is what advisors are telling me. So, like, there is frustrations there. There is also frustrations around this selection criteria and knowing exactly, like, we talk about tier one, tier two, tier three, but an advisor can't go out to a farmer and tell them that, look, if you're in tier three, you've no hope of getting in because the pints aren't there yet for the different elements of the different plans. And that's one of the frustrations. So I think that advisors are really sort of caught here because they're feeling the pressure because the phone is hopping. So it is that, yeah, like we've 46,000 people finishing last, we have another 10,000 between people that weren't in at REAP, that type of thing.
Yeah.
And like they're like two advisors rang me in the last week and said this, they really are feeling the strain that how are they going to get some farmers in? There's some farmers that they know probably aren't suitable, but yeah, because they can't tell them, look, this is exactly what you're going to get, or this is your chances of getting in. And then the other side of things is that there's a lot still happening on the cooperation entry, which is 20,000, people going into that. Now, and I was on one of those webinars, Jack, the Hin Harrier, group that are involved or that are overseeing two or three areas. I was on that last week. It was a quick webinar to last, I think, around an hour and a half. But to be honest, Jack, I left that webinar with a lot of questions because it's a very complex area. And I know some advisors working in that area are, say, very well tuned into it. But like, on a number of occasions, the host said, well, we have still waiting on the department for that, or this, you'll have to go to the department to clarify that. And those sort of things are what's irking people. And I think that maybe it's aspirational to think that there's going to be so many plans done and submitted in a 6 to 8 week period. And the longer that this goes on, the more pressure I think that will come on the department to reassess this, say, tight period of getting plans in.
Okay. Darren, maybe just to touch off, there's been some recent changes to the stocking rate piece, and you came across as there's a nice calculator online that can help farmers in terms of those changes to the stocking rates, because a lot of this relates back to the schemes that we've just talked about in terms of where they are. Just give us a flavour of that one.
Yeah, so look, at a small bit of angst over this as well. So this came out just as we were going to print, not say this Wednesday, the Wednesday before, and I put in a small piece in the paper saying that the calculator was online, new stocking rates. Ginny, the phone started again saying that, is there something changing? Is it going to affect our payments this year? First thing is to allay the fears that this is nothing, say, to do with your current payments or your disadvantaged area this year is still on the same stocking rates as it's always been. There's no changes, say, to the single farm payment or basic payment scheme for this year. Most of this is looking forward to next year. And the reason the department are talking about it now is this: they're going to use a 2022 stocking rate initially to determine some of the checks for next year. And I won't spend too long, but one of the big ones is the active farmer check. So every farmer is going to be checked going forward to see whether they fit this definition of an active farmer. Stocking rate is going to be the first one used, and essentially what that is that you have to have a minimum stocking rate of 0.1 livestock units per hectare. That in essence, Jack, is the same as the 0.15, because the livestock units coefficients have changed. So a ewe is 0.15 at the moment, that's going to go to 0.1. A suckler cow is 1, but that's going back to 0.8. so in general, there isn't a huge amount of change. The areas where it does become, I suppose, important is around eco schemes going forward. And there's two eco schemes in general. So one is this extensive livestock production, and that's for anyone to stock between the 0.1 and 1.4 livestock units per hectare. That will suffice as one, eco scheme measure. If you're between 0.1 and 1.2, you can double it up. And the other one is around, say, reducing your chemical nitrogen. So it's going to have an impact on that sort of. But it's very hard to be thinking about this is coming for next year, but based on this year's stocking rate, and the department understand that as well. And in fairness to them on this, that they have said, look at this, there's a lot going on here that farmers can make changes to next year's stocking rate. We'll take this into account. You can use your 2023 stocking rate, but in doing so, know that your payments are going to be delayed up to March 2024. So that's, I suppose, one thing that people need to be cognizant of as well.
Okay. No, excellent. Darren, maybe just to come back to the sheep game, just to touch off of there once. Any young girl or young fella in the west of Ireland now is under pressure at the weekends for dagging and dipping. There's definitely a lot of dipping going on like at this time of year.
Yeah, look, at some of the shearers, I talked like to some of the plunge dipping contractors, because there's been a big, say, growth in this area in recent years. If I went back 5 years, Jack, you might have two or three tractor-drawn plunge dippers around the country. Now you have two or three, say, lorry units. You have jeep-drawn, say, plunge dipping units. So that's really taken off, which is good to see. Yeah. Look, there's a couple of things that farmers should always be aware of. And I think, look, this is it. There's, sometimes you make up a dip and you start dipping away. And the next you think about it is after maybe 100 sheep, and you think, Ginny, I need to top up that. You should be topping up the dip bat after every 30, 35 sheep. And also is to take note that you need to replenish the bat fully after, say, every... One sheep will take 2 liters out of the bat. So if your bat holds 1,000 liters, after 500 sheep, you should be totally replenishing it. That's
even Darren, if it's flowing back in, you know, the way that, you know, the sheep comes out and then she drains back into the pond. Like, but you're saying even if it's all draining back in, replenish it completely after 500 sheep.
Exactly. And where that's coming from, Jack, is that even let your sheep be as clean as possible. The amount of contaminants that's coming in, even coming off the wool, that's for total efficacy that you need to be doing that. So you do, and you need to be changing it, which some farmers will say, if I'm adding or topping up every 30 sheep, so that goes again it. But it does, it's the efficacy of the dip. The other two things is, don't put any colorants in it, because it does impact on it. And also this time of the year, we talk about there'll be a lot of people say maybe giving fluke dose, worm doses to lambs. You don't dip sheep that have got a levamisole based product for 2 weeks before dipping or 2 weeks after, because that has an impact on, say, the way the chemicals are broken down in the animal's body.
Oh, because a lot of, I mean, again, a lot of people would try and do all the jobs together when they bring them together, Darren, you know, when the sheep are in, like, especially in the mountain areas, yeah.
Hey, exactly. And look, that levamisole-based product, it's a yellow drench is the common way in Ireland.
Okay. Darren, quick one on you've been a page there on the Galway sheep breed. Like, I mean, it's one of the only native sheep breeds left in Ireland, is it?
Yeah, well, look, there'll be arguments around this. It's definitely the only recorded native breed. Some people will say that there's other breeds, say that there is Roscommon sheep that are still there, that there's, say, remnants of old hill breeds that are still there. Look, there is one over in the west, but this is the longest one in one. Like, and it's a fascinating story that this can be, they're 100 years recording, and we talk about performance recording. They were doing this before it even became fashionable. And like, they went from being, I suppose, developed, or they came from the Roscommon breed, to at one stage being a prominent breed of sheep in the country, to in 1994, there was only something like 18 breeders registered, 300 sheep left. They were put on, and they were, say, classed as, by the Rare Breed Trust, as endangered or critical. They brought in more breeders, and they increased back up to 700 sheep, and they've stayed sort of steady around that. The big talk and point around the Galway sheep at the moment is around conservation of rare breeds and acres. In this, there's a lot of talk around that if you're a member of, say, the Galway sheep breed or Dexter's or Kerry, for that you'll get priority entry. I spoke with the committee on that and said, well, what do you think? And they said, look, there's two ways of looking at it. Great that this might generate a bit of interest, but we want people joining that have DTOS of the breed. Essentially is that they're buying Galway sheep to put with a Galway ram to breed with them. And there's a couple of things just to take note of there, is that there is, look, a cost in it. You have to record with Sheep Ireland. You have to become a member. But look, at the end of the day, that sale is on next Monday, Jack, in Athenry, which is the home of, say, the Galway sheep, show at 11 o'clock. Sale at 1 o'clock, and we'll be down there, because I think it's something that it'll be a long time before there's a lot of breeds in the country that are celebrating 100 years, and just the history that they have is phenomenal.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Before I go to Aidan, Darren, just one quick one on the mark trade. Any big changes in terms of price?
Yeah, a bit more life in the hogger trade, Jack. We're getting into that. Say, they were difficult for the last few weeks, even very hard to move plain quality hoggers, even at a low price. Numbers have come back a good bit, so there is a bit more life. Where I call it, Jack, 180 to 220 for your top quality hoggers, medium quality 160 to 180. And despite us saying it every year, there still is significant numbers selling between 130 and 155. And they are probably summoning sheep, light, maybe smaller framed hoggets. That's always going to be sluggish to manage.
Okay. Yeah. 100%. Thanks for that, Darren. Chat to you next week. Aidan, you were down at the Future of Grasses conference down south. Any standout messages?
Actually, there's a couple, Jack. I mean, the first one, I suppose, the importance of grass and clover, obviously, you know. We sometimes talk about towards the future and talk about multi-species and all the rest, but I mean, the clear message I got from some of the more experienced researchers, not necessarily the ones that based in Chagas now, was to focus still on grass and clover. Luke Delaby was over from France. You'd know Luke, Jack, you know, he's a well-established researcher, really experienced, you know, in French and Ireland research systems. He basically lambasted Irish farmers and you know, existing, you know, policy in Ireland, I suppose, for not embracing the grass clover route earlier than this. He said, I was over here 25 years ago, I warned you about, you know, the impact of high chemical nitrogen levels going to have on water quality. He didn't take it on board. We did it in France, and now, you know, every grass-based dairy farmer in France, which will be, you know, in regions they're common, but across the whole country, they're few and far between. But they have, he said that they've embraced the clover thing now. All those farmers are all using clover and have cut back dramatically on their nitrates, chemical nitrogen levels. And there's no derogation in France either, so that will probably have an impact on how much chemical nitrogen has been used too. But that was one thing. Then we had Trevor Gilliland. You know, you'd know Trevor as well, from Northern Ireland. He's based now in Queens, but he was with AFPI for years, decades. He's loads of research papers done. He was looking at multi-species, and I talk about this with David Corbett later on, multi-species and clover. And like, you know, based on his research knowledge and his experiences, he still thinks the focus for most Irish farmers should be on grass and clover and not necessarily the 6 or 8 or 12 multi-species worlds, which we're hearing more of now. He doesn't think that in, you know, as science improves and multi-species, we'll be using multiple species, you know, 6 or 8 or whatever species we have currently in many of these mixtures, because there's no real purpose for many of them. So he thinks if you have a specific need, why you want one species included in your sword, go for that. But if you don't, what's the point in putting it in, you know, because you're actually, you could be doing more, not harm, be the wrong word, but if there's no benefit in it, why would you do it? You know, he was really interested now. And look, I mean, he prefaced everything then in the fact that, you know, maybe he's just stuck in his ways and he's more used. So he's open-minded. He says, you know, for decades, big oil would have refused, you know, climate change, fossil fuels being a cause of climate change and all the rest. And he doesn't want to be in this position, you know, to say that like he's just against multi-species, because he's not, but he just he wants to see that there's a valid reason why each right is putting in. But look, there's definitely the benefits of multi-species that was outlined by UCD, by John Finn and Chagas and a few more of them. You know, all the experiences that they're getting with multi-species is brilliant in terms of over yielding animal improvements and all the rest. But the fact that they don't last any longer than 2 years is 2 or 3 years is a real disappointment from the herd point of view. And that it's so difficult to get those established again. And if you are, you know, having to receive the full receive more often, the amount of carbon that's been lost through ploughing or cultivations, it rules out any benefit that you're going to get from the multi-species in terms of you know, carbon sequestration. So it was interesting, you know, put it that way.
And I mean, on that, I mean, I see Kieran Maley has a piece there with Hugh Harbison up in Farming and County Derry. Aidan, I know you featured with Hugh before. I mean, Hugh is definitely going down, you know, he's going down, I suppose he's talking about the net zero track, and he's talking about multi-species squads, and he's talking about, which again now is, you know, uncommon, like for Northern Ireland, like in terms of that grazing system, etc. But Hugh seems to be kind of really going down that road.
He is, yeah. So he's on this project, this Arc Zero, you know, they're looking to get to net zero as much as possible on dairy farms. So he's, you know, cutting back nitrogen is a key, chemical nitrogen is a key part of that because of nitrous oxide emissions and all the rest. So he's putting in multi-species big time. He's putting in clover as well, obviously. But he's only really dabbling at it, Jack, and he's only at it about 12 months at most. So like these forests look great for the first 2 years, you know, but it's after what happens in year 3, year 4 and year 5 is going to be the acid test for them. Look, heavy enough soils up there. Drought won't be a problem. So a lot of those deeper root, you know, he's putting in those deeper tap root varieties such as chicory and plantain, because really drainage more so than anything else. So that it'll help with water percolation down through the soil, avoid compaction, that type of a thing. And obviously then your legumes are going to get your chemical nitrogen to it. But he's getting on really well so far. And look, I mean, the other thing, Jack, we have to say is even if these herbs don't last, like at the end of the day, you're going to be left with perennial ryegrass and white clover, maybe a bit of red clover. Yes. So a key point from the conference last week, or even up with Hugh as well, is that make sure you put in good varieties of perennial ryegrass and clover, because that's what you're going to be left with. In a lot of these mixtures we see, there's pretty poor varieties thrown in with the multi-species bags as a way of getting rid of them. You know, they're kind of masking some of the quality of it. But like really, you want to be putting in the top PPI varieties, the same you would with if you're sowing a monoculture. I think that's a key point. But look, it'd be interesting to follow the likes of Hugh and a few other of those farmers up in the north, no more than Shinnock down in West Cork. They're on the same path as well. But you know, it's going to be challenging. There's a lot of, you know, we don't yet have a solution around the methane side of stuff. So I think it's fair to say that we're right to work on everything else in the absence of a silver bullet on methane, and see how things go from there.
Okay, as you say, you touch off some of these issues with David Corbett. You had a chat with him earlier, so we'll listen to that straight after your piece here. Aidan, in terms of grass growth, we touched off it again in the quick fire. Like, I mean, is it fair to say that really it has really kicked off now in the last couple of days, and the predictions for next week would be positive enough again? I think it's a relatively dry week coming up again next week.
Yeah, and soil temperatures are high. Like we're running around 3 degrees higher than normal. So some soil temperatures are up almost 18 degrees, which is very high for the time of year. As I say, there's plenty of moisture in the soil. So our soil moisture deficits were 80 millimetres in parts last, you know, probably two or three weeks ago before the rain came. They're down to 2 and 3 millimetres now. So it's incredible to turn around. And we have plenty of nitrogen in the system as well. There seems to be a good release of nitrogen, you know, this mineralization going on. Again, I talked to David about that, but it's so there's like all the ingredients are there for good growth. Muggy weather, high soil temperatures, plenty of nitrogen and plenty of moisture. Some farmers are growing up to 70 kilos a day at these days, you know, and even for a couple of days there earlier in the week, it was so muggy and warm, it was almost like May rather than September. And they're probably growing 80 or 90 kilos for those, maybe, you know, maybe only a day or so. But back to the, like, we spoke at the quickfire about the farmer, like, who's still low on average farm cover. For me, that's typical. Most farmers are still behind target, even though growth rates are good. So you not only should you be looking at growth rates, you need to look at how much grass you have in the farm. I wouldn't still, I said at the start of the, when the rain came first, that we should forget about having a peak cover and concentrate on having a closing cover. And I still agree with that. There is a risk now, believe it or not, Jack, if you keep feeding hard for another 10 days or 2 weeks and growth rates are still going to be 70 or 80 kilos per day, you could end up with too much grass in the farm. Like it's, unless you're watching it carefully, like you could end up in that position. And really the way to avoid that is to do your budget. So you know where you're going to be. Like the pasture-based figure or budgeting tool, or there's other ones available as well, but they're the ones most farmers use. Like it's actually really good. Of all the things in pasture-based, it's probably one of the better aspects of it. So I'd say input your figures into that. Know what your target is for the 1st of December, which is typically, you know, somewhere between 600 and 900 kilos of dry matter per hectare. And then you put in your cover then every week, and it'll tell you whether you're going to be up or down from that. You can change how much meal you put in, how much silage you put in, and that'll have an impact then on what your closing cover is going to be.
Okay.
So I think play around with it, and you'll get a good idea there. There's no point in putting in feed now, only to be cutting out silage in two or three weeks' time. That'll be a disaster.
Are you rowing back a little bit in? I thought we talked about last week that we had to maximize growth rate and there was no way of getting too much grass on the farm. You're saying that there is a chance now that you might actually get in, you might get two heavy covers ahead of the cows.
I thought last week we'd be feeding silage and meal for the rest of the autumn. But when you do the budget, I did a budget on a farm earlier in the week, and it showed that if we can kept on the same track, the average farm cover would be 1,200 kilos a hectare by the 1st of December. And like, that's way too much grass. Like, you know, you wouldn't want that even opening up in spring. So definitely you want to be very careful that you're not going to be putting in excess feed. So definitely, I mean, and that's basically, like, you only need 1 week or 10 days of high growth rates to have a huge jump in average farm cover. And if you get it, great. Now, the other thing is, so Jack, if your farm cover is still very low, you're probably not going to be growing to 70s and 80s. You need to be a minimum of around 600 kilos a hectare in order to have enough grass in the farm for it to grow more grass. But there is power in ground, but you also need that cover there just to get the thing moving again.
I hear you. I see that there's the piece there in the news pages, there's a big demand for generators from dairy farmers. I suppose this is coming on the back of the whole piece around, you know, an energy outage, I suppose, over the next couple of months, the potential of it, etc. I suppose is there a lot of dairy farms that still don't have any way of powering the tank or the parlour, we'll say, on in terms of if energy was out?
Sure, there is, I'd say. Yeah, even on our own place at home, Jack, we don't have any generator. So we're just relying on the fact that we haven't had an outage, you know, for many years. But you'd be tempted to get one now, to be fair, like, because of the threat around an outage. I suppose it depends on where you are. If you're in a hilly area, an area that's prone, you know, on the coast, where you're getting regular outages, and even in some parts inland, to just get whatever it is about it, the energy infrastructure in the area isn't as good as it is in other places, and they're prone to getting blackouts, you know, through ESB lines being down and whatever. But if you're in an area that's close to towns or close to built up areas, you tend to avoid them more. Now I'm talking here about storms and issues like that will cause an outage. But if there's widespread blackouts, everyone is going to be affected, no matter where you are. And the risk time, of course, is this 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. when the peak of energy is. And that's coinciding, as you say, with milking times and with milk cooling times. So they're like, okay, we're heading into the autumn. There's no reason why farmers can't milk a little bit earlier if that's a risk. But like, at the same time, having a generator on hand is probably sensible. You know, it's a good investment, I'd say. It's something they last, you know, you'll get as long as a generator, once you service it and maintain it and run it regularly, as you will out of the milking machine itself. So I think it's a good investment to have. I was even in the co-op the other day in the co-op, and a woman came in and she was buying a generator for the house, you know. So they said that they can't keep them stocked. So that everyone is concerned about it now. So I think it's no harm to be, I'd definitely be looking into it if there's money there for it.
Yeah, excellent. Aidan, 100%. Thanks for that. And we'll talk to you next week. You had a chat earlier with David Corbett from Grassland Agro. Let's have a listen.
So the deadline for the last day of spreading fertilizer was last Wednesday. So does this mean you're a bit like the teachers and you're now taking a 4 month holiday?
That's it now, Aidan. Yeah, put the feet up. Put the feet up now. We'll go training on for the winter. Get ready for next year.
That's the job. But I suppose, like, it's fair to say, you know, I know you can't spread fertilizer from now on, but it doesn't mean that the, you know, the managing grass or managing soil fertility is finished for the autumn. Is that fair to say?
No, not at all, Aidan. And look, I suppose the fertilizer season is finished for the nitrogen and the phosphorus. Important to remember, there's no deadline or there's no cutoff for potash. That can be spread throughout the year. But look, I suppose personally, I think potash should be spread, you know, around now or even earlier, maybe just to get maybe better use and better efficiency of that. But look, ideal time for potash, to be honest.
David, is it available? Can you get it? I mean, there's some talks of it being scarce. Is MOP available?
Yeah, look, it is an issue too, and there's no point dancing around it. Like, availability is an issue. There is some, look, you will get potash, to be honest. There is some in the country, but look, using it wisely and using it where you need it. And look, I wouldn't be putting it out, for no reason, you know, just for the sake of it. Look, I suppose with availability comes a price. But look, if there is potash in the air and there was potash bought earlier on in the year, look, using it wisely, maybe looking back on where there was maybe surplus bales taken off for big cuts of silage, even looking at your soil fertility data, and that is a key resource there to try and figure out maybe where you might need a bit of potash. The other one then, Aidan, is the lime. Look, again, we'd be harping on about lime time and time again. Again, no cut-off point for lime. Lime ideal this time of year. You know, you have it working in the soil over the winter, you're getting it broken down and weathered, and then you have a soil that's buffered and ready to go then in the springtime. And look, I suppose there's a lot of talk around nitrogen and that, and there's no point shying away from it. Look, availability is definitely going to be an issue, and look, I suppose with availability comes price. But look, there's one controllable that we have on farm, and that controllable is soil fertility, and that is in our hands. Like, and we have the ability to improve that, be it the P, the K, or the pH. As I said, that is a controllable, and that will drive efficiency of nitrogen. And nitrogen efficiency on farm, Aidan, as you know, it's not good, to be fair. You know, if it is 25% on average, that is probably the height of it. So we need to be getting that nitrogen use efficiency up. And one of the key resources there is soil fertility. And that is manageable. We can improve our soil fertility. And
so you're saying get the pH up, it'll make whatever nitrogen you do spread more available and more efficient. That's when you say efficiency, you mean what you're actually applying, you're getting more bang for your buck.
Yeah, because it just in simple terms, if you put out a bag of urea, you're only getting a quarter of that bag used efficiently. The other three quarters is inefficient or not used, essentially, you know. So by getting your soil fertility right, that will improve that efficiency. And look, it's as simple as that, Aidan, and that is going, they are going to be the KPIs for next year. And they have been KPIs for a long time, soil fertility. But look, when with the way nitrogen is looking, and look, it's a crystal ball, that nitrogen side of things, like, but look, it doesn't look great, to be honest. So getting the best out of whatever we have. Look, even at the moment, Aidan, probably, and you've probably seen yourself, maybe a lot of problems around milk ureas and that.
I was just going to bring it on. Yeah, current issues. Some farmers are complaining as well, David, about not being able to graze out properly. Is that something you've come across?
Yeah, it is, and it's just sour grass, to be honest. Just high nitrates in the grass, Aidan, and it's not necessarily down to a lot of nitrogen bin spread. It's just ideal soil conditions. We're after a prolonged dry spell. The ground is hot. It's heated up. It's opened up, and I suppose there has been moisture obviously re-added there now, and in the last 2 weeks, and that is just an ideal condition for mineralization. And we talk about mineralization, it's literally just the breakdown of the soil and the release of unavailable nutrients or nitrogen into available nitrogen. That nitrogen, I suppose, has just been taken up by the plant in high quantities, and that is causing the grass to get sour, and it is causing issues with graze outs, but it's also causing issues with milky ureas. And look, I suppose just around milky ureas, you know, a farmer might say, well, you know, what about it? Like that is affecting the animal's performance. It's upsetting the whole cycle of the animal, the rumen. You probably will see cows now will be a bit loose, and you know, you might put it down to lower dry matters, but it's also down to high nitrates in the grass. And it just kind of I suppose affects the whole system of the animal in the breakdown of that forage, and you're also affecting, I suppose, the efficiency and uptake of nutrients and throw even the protein and energy out of that grass.
So what can farmers do, David, if you have high milky urea nitrogen? Is there anything you can do at farm level to reduce the impact of it?
Yeah, I suppose not really. Maybe just being a bit more cautious about the nitrogen, Aidan. Look, I suppose the cutoff date now has gone with the nitrogen, but so there's no point talking about spreading nitrogen now. But look, I suppose it's just
I suppose the level of concentrate, the protein percent of the meal might have a bearing as well. You know, there's obviously loads of nitrogen in the grass, so you don't need to be adding extra protein to the diet. Like,
is that of course, Ed, definitely, yeah. Like, it's inefficient again. And we talk about nitrogen in the grass, that is just high levels of protein. You know, nitrogen and protein are directly related. Like, so, yeah, less protein in the meal. And look, I suppose it was maybe. Look, it's just a natural cycle, to be honest, Aidan. It was just because of that flush of nitrogen that was released from the soil, essentially. And to be fair, there wasn't much, Aidan, put out over that prolonged dry period. You know, farmers were a bit, I suppose they were reserved in how much they were putting out.
So on the one hand, I suppose it's this release of nitrogen is a good thing, you know, because it means that there's going to be good grass growth conditions now, or you know,
Look, so grass growth is probably up in, you know, 60 kilos of dry matter per day at the moment. Like it's and that's, I'd say, probably even higher in places, like, you know, and grass is growing, like, and that is down to the ideal conditions. And probably the last time we saw something like this, Aidan, was back in 2018. And even the drought situation, I would have said it was probably worse this year, and probably on the east of the country, the drought situation, because it was just a lot more prolonged. You know, it was probably a shorter period there in 2018. It's a good thing. It's a sure indicator that the soil is working. Joe, there is life in the soil.
Just to watch those two things then around milky urea nitrogen and graze outs.
Yeah, definitely. And just look, you probably mentioned it already. It's just maybe just be conscious about farm covers as well. Like, and I know I was just my own experience now. I was out with a farmer there yesterday evening, and probably a low enough farm cover, maybe around 500-600 of a farm cover. But I suppose he had one particular paddock that he was going to leave. It was probably around 1,200. And look, we made a decision to look. He was looking for a hand in maybe what to do. Like, you know, would he leave it grow on a bit and take bales? Bales were kind of, you know, he was a bit short on forage for the winter. So, look, the rest of the covers probably were low enough, maybe 600-700 covers. So, look, I suppose made the decision then to graze that higher cover and let the rest of it grow, you know, because those lower covers you wouldn't feel, you know yourself, Ed, and you wouldn't mowing through them, waiting for that field into that silage field that he was potentially going to leave to come on. You know, you wouldn't be long seeing the farm cover dwindle away to nothing and you know, you'd be caught. So look, I'd be saying to farmers, Joe, go out if you have ever measured before, if you can get someone in to give you a hand and maybe make a plan going into the winter, because look, it's an unusual one. The farm covers are very low.
Two final things, David, before I leave you off. You were down at the Swords for the Future conference last week in Chagas. What were your take-home messages from there?
Yeah, look, very good, Aidan. I saw you banging around there as well. And look, it was two great days. Look, a lot of positivity there around the multi-species and the red and white clover, Aidan. And look, personally, I think the red clover is going to be, look, it's going to be a great technology going forward. And it's super. And I've seen it on farm this year time and time again. especially during the drought situation. A lot of farmers have been zero grazing it. But look, I suppose the take home, even with maybe the multi species, and look, there's good and bad talk about multi species, and a lot of farmers are skeptical about it and slow about the idea of putting it on farm. And look, that's fair enough. But I thought Trevor Gilliland gave an exceptional talk at it, and look, it was a bit of reality, to be honest. Like, you know, and I suppose the thing is with the multi-species, and look, it was an eye-opener for me. Look, pick your varieties, pick your herbs based on what you want, you know, whether it's beef production, or maybe you want to work on the anti-helminthics and reducing worming, you know, and there's a lot of data out there, I suppose international data, you know, based and in Ireland, you know, based on improved growth rates and quicker slaughter days with lambs and beef, like. So but look, I thought it was a very good conference. Now I suppose we were out in Moor Park as well, and we saw what's going on in relation to the multi-species, and we were over in Curtin's farm as well with Brendan Horn as well. But look, I suppose congratulations there to Mick and Deirdre, Mike Egan, and Caitlin Looney had a lot to play with it as well. But look, it was a super conference.
And there's a report in this week's Farmers Journal on it as well, so listeners can and viewers can see it there as well. Before I leave you go, David, the Grass 10 Farmer Dealer competition, it's coming around again. Are you judging this year, or are you leaving it to one of your colleagues, or what's the plan?
Am I judging? Is it in? I suppose, yeah, I'll be around there somewhere. Look, I suppose myself and John and Sean McMahon, we were kind of tight team in there last year on the judging. And look, it's a super event. And look, I can't advise or emphasize to our farmers to apply for it and, you know, give it a go. Like, and I think a lot of farmers think they're not good enough to enter, but they are. You know, there's exceptional farmers out there. And look, any farmer out there that is measuring grass or, you know, doing it seriously, like should think about it. Or even a farmer that's not measuring grass and thinking about getting into it, you know, look, there's plenty of resources out there, plenty help in terms of getting up and started. But yeah, look, I suppose Colin Doherty was on there last Tuesday week, and look, it's a super event. He's an exceptional farmer, there's no doubt about it. And look, he's embraced the legume and the white clover and red clover, something serious. Look, I suppose just Philip Tyndall as well down in Enniscorthy, he's on there the 28th of September. So look, well worth a visit to Philip Tyndall's farm. He was the young farmer winner there, Aidan, as well, you know. So look. It's super, super competition.
Right, folks, that's it for another week. Thanks for watching and indeed for listening. Thanks to all our own specialists, Adam, Darren and Aidan, and to David Corbett from Grassland Agro. Remember, you can listen back to any of the recent webinars or podcasts on ifj.ie/podcast. Shout out once again to our supporters, Grassland Agro and ESB Networks, for helping us to make this show happen. We'll be back again next week when we'll be recording from the ploughing. So until then, stay safe and safe farming. Thank you.